morning, good morning, good morning. Thursday morning. We have a new president, President Biden, and we are here on the air. That's the name of the show. And I have a special guest, and I'm going to see if he's there right now. Fred, are you still available?
I am with you.
All right, we're going to have to shut this music down. That's just nuts. Hang on. All right, what? I hit the wrong button there. Now we're on the air. Fred Malone, bon vivant and special person to the Marion Historical Society. One of my favorite two guests.
Well, thank you. I appreciate the comment.
Well, how are you doing today? And has your water guy come yet?
Yes, all here and gone.
Oh, my goodness.
Good shape. Yeah, we're in good shape. We shouldn't have any interruptions, hopefully, so I think we'll be all set.
All we'll have is those spots on the quarter hour, and I'll let you know when they're coming.
Yeah, and I'm looking at about 10:15 on my clock here, so...
you got it. Within
we should be fairly close.
Yeah.
Well, of course, like many Americans, I spent my whole day yesterday glued to the television set. Being an amateur historian and particularly interested in presidential history, it's always a great thrill for me to watch the inauguration every 4 years to see what's different and obviously to get a sense and a feel for what our new commander-in-chief is going to lay out for us for the coming 4 years. And I must tell you, I was pleasantly surprised and greatly impressed with the way the inauguration went off yesterday.
Oh, my.
Given what happened a couple of weeks ago and with the fortification of the Capitol, unfortunately, I thought they handled it with true grace.
And my goodness.
I was so excited to see it.
Have you ever seen a more inspiring fireworks display?
Oh, my word.
Holy cow.
Well, you know, I always thought that the red, white, and boom they do in down Columbus is probably one of the most fantastic ones I've ever seen. But this one actually put shame to that one. That was absolutely fantastic.
Well, when I was, I've been to the Washington, D.C. 4th of July fireworks a couple of times. Once when I was down there in the service, and the other time was much later, so it really hadn't changed much. But the D.C. fireworks display is pretty much a rival to Red, White, and Boom. It's because they do it over the Washington Monument, and it's just amazing to see all that the fireworks going off there. But last night, Dr. Feynman and I talked about it, and we didn't talk about last night, but we talked about the inaugural, and both of us are criers.
Oh, yeah.
And
well, I
cried
too.
Through the whole thing.
I'm extremely emotional, becoming more so now that I've crossed, you know, that magic threshold in age.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, 50,
and
right?
And I'm ashamed of it, and quite frankly, our new president is the same way. And I sometimes think, a lot of that has to do with the fact that we're Irish immigrants at heart.
Yes.
So the Irish people are very very emotional people, so I think that's part of it as well. But I thought the whole day was absolutely great, the
fantastic
inauguration speech was absolutely inspiring.
And the,
and
poem,
the young lady who read the poem, that wrote the poem, she's a rising star.
Doesn't it make you proud to have young people like
it does.
That. Yeah,
it absolutely does. It makes me feel good to think that we've got people like that are coming up and are being recognized on the national scene. And someone said yesterday, I heard it on one of the reports, that the median age now in this country is 38 years old, but the average age of a senator is 68 years old.
38 is the average age.
That's what they said on this report last night.
Huh.
So, you know, of course, a lot of us, you know, the older generations are dying out, unfortunately. And,
that's what happens. That's,
that's
the way life goes.
The boomers, of which we're a part, are now some of us younger boomers in our 70s are now becoming the older boomers because we've lost some of the ones born, you know, in the 40s.
I make fun of my wife because she's not a boomer. She's of the best generation.
Okay.
About 2 days.
By 2 days. Well, I thought that was an interesting fact, and you know, we are seeing some younger people come to the Senate. The gentleman that was just sworn in yesterday, yes. the Latino gentleman that was sworn in yesterday to replace Kamala Harris, considerably younger, I think in his 40s, early
Padilla,
40s.
Padilla.
Yes,
yeah,
right.
Yeah.
So, you know, time.
And Osloff, I think, is in his 20s. Isn't Osloff in his 20s?
I'm sorry?
Isn't Osloff, or I'm probably mispronouncing it, but isn't he in his 20s?
Yeah, I think he, maybe 29.
Yeah,
he's,
something
he's
like
right
that.
On the cusp of turning 30, but yeah, absolutely. So, and of course, our vice president is 56.
Yeah.
So she's young by my consideration.
And she looks like she's about 40s.
She does.
Something.
She does.
Yeah.
So really excited about it. Hopefully things will proceed as President Joe has planned, and but I have very good feelings about it. I was disappointed to hear this morning that one of the first things they announced when they got into the White House that there actually was no plan for the distribution of the vaccine, so that was kind of disheartening. So
yeah.
They really are starting from square one, trying
yeah.
to put this whole thing together.
Sure sounds like it.
Yeah.
All right, now, you're the man in charge of dinner with the presidents.
Yes.
Who are you going to try and get somebody to be a Trump?
We don't do living presidents.
Yeah, I didn't think you did.
No, that's our only prerequisite is we don't do living presidents.
Maybe he'd be very kind and pass away for you.
No. We better be careful. We don't know what kind of an audience.
Yeah,
we
right.
We don't want to alienate anybody.
Yeah, and there might be a special service person out there that says that's a threat. So,
That's true too.
Or a secret service.
But no, we don't do living presidents.
Okay.
And good news is with the way things are looking with the vaccine coming out and what they have planned on the horizon. We are planning to go ahead with our dinner this year in November.
Oh, good.
We've got the plans are laid. The idea is to come back with the same group that we had planned for last year that
mm-hmm.
obviously got canceled.
Right.
So we'll be looking at that same
what
group
is
again.
The date on that, Fred?
Well, it's always the first Saturday in November, and
okay.
I haven't looked ahead to see what that's going to be. That will be the 6th of November.
Okay.
So that's always the first Saturday in November that we do the dinner. But more information as we prod along into 2021 about that. We're also planning our luncheon that we've had for the last several years, a luncheon with the president, which where we cater mostly to out-of-town and out-of-state bus groups, and that'll
mm-hmm.
be in May sometime. I don't have the date firmed up for that yet. That's, again, hopefully considering the fact
yeah.
that most of the people that will give us herd immunity will be inoculated by
yeah,
then.
Yeah, right. Well,
we'll see what happens.
Apparently, I noticed that I'm supposed to be able to get my inoculation after the 1st of February.
Yeah, you and I are in the same
yeah.
category. So,
but I'm not sure that's going to take place
because
they don't have as much vaccination.
And from
stuff.
What I just heard from the governor the other day, that those dates may have to be revisited. They haven't done it yet.
Yeah.
But, in fact, my wife took my in-laws this morning to get their vaccinations. They were on
Fantastic.
For this week. They're both over 80, obviously. And so they had an appointment at 10:15 this morning. So hopefully they'll be able to get theirs this morning and we'll be able to move right along with it. So.
Well, when they sent the announcement out, I'm looking at it right now, when they sent the announcement out, they had 800 doses available.
Yep.
That's not going to go very far.
No. Well, even in a small county like Marion County, we're around, 36,000, something like
for
that.
For the county, I think we're 65, but for the city, we're in the 30s.
Like,
yeah.
That's just a drop in the bucket. And,
yeah.
And according to the governor, the biggest percentage of people in Ohio are in that upper age group. So,
above 65?
We're the ones that are going to take most of the vaccines. So,
yeah.
I don't know. We'll just have to wait and see what's going to happen.
Yeah.
Well, today I thought, since we just experienced the inauguration of our 46th president, yesterday, I thought maybe we would go back and talk about some of the inaugurations from presidents of the past.
Okay, now you're going to steal some of my thunder because my show after you leave is all about trivia of the inauguration, but that's okay. I'll ask again because we'll have a different audience then.
Well, I wanted to start out talking about... Oh, the first thing I want to do, I do want to mention... on February the 22nd, on Monday, February the 22nd, Washington's birthday, I'm going to be with our friend Mike on his Monday evening show,
right.
Mike Wilson,
sure.
at 5:15, and we're going to be talking about all things George Washington.
That'll be a good one.
Yeah, so We'll have about, I think he's about a 45-minute show.
And no, his teeth weren't wooden.
No, they weren't. A lot of myths dispelled,
yeah, there
you
are.
Know, along those lines.
And he didn't chop down a cherry tree.
No, that's another one. That's another one. But he was a truth teller. Though.
Yeah.
He did try to adhere to the truth. But he'll be turning 289 years old on that day this year.
Somebody's got to tell him that he's getting old.
Yeah, that probably will come about.
200 and what?
289 years.
Oh,
he was
my
born
goodness.
In 1732.
Huh.
Yeah, so...
was he born in the United States or was he born in England?
Well, he was born in this country, but he was still a British subject.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
So anyway, I'll probably mention that again before we sign off later today just to remind people.
Sure.
And I think I will be back again on your show before I do Mike's show so we can...
most likely, unless the creek rises.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Or one of us, you know, gets sick, which hopefully
right.
won't happen. But I wanted to start out, before we start talking about inaugurations, I wanted to mention a new book that...
Sure.
Veteran CBS correspondent John Dickerson has out now. It's called The Hardest Job in the World. Have you heard of it?
I have not.
It's all about, you know, the job of being President of the United States.
Oh, yes, I have heard about it. Yes, I have.
Yeah, and I wanted to mention, I just wanted to go over a few things that he touches on in the book, since we're talking about new presidents, a new president today and some of the older presidents that
mm-hmm.
have gone by.
We got 4 minutes, so...
Okay, all right, well, this may take more than 4 minutes.
Yeah,
we'll pick it up
okay.
on the other side of the
sure.
break, but... George Washington had a lot of misgivings about, you know, assuming the role of President of the United States. He worried about even going to the Constitutional Convention, because if the country was lukewarm about the necessity of an overhaul of the young government, then it might not be ratified.
Uh-huh.
So he'd kind of given up his reputation to a losing cause. That's what he was afraid of. Once he had the job, though he started worrying about the ocean of difficulties that would face him in the upcoming 4-year term. Now, and I'm quoting some of this from John Dickerson's book. Mm-hmm. Some of the founding fathers at that particular time that thought that the role was maybe too much for one person.
Mm-hmm.
Benjamin Franklin wanted a committee instead of an individual. He thought that the consensus among several people would make it harder for any one person to become a despot.
But it also make it very difficult to get to a decision.
That's true. In the end, George Washington helped solve that problem. He was the model for the job. Now, according to John Dickerson, some of the founders thought that was a grave error.
Hmm.
Future presidents were not guaranteed to have Washington's virtue.
Well, that's true.
With what we just found out with the preceding president.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so... early presidents, with the exception of Washington, were treated like average Joes. Yes or no?
So, was Washington really that virtuous?
Well, history says he was.
Okay.
Some books I've read said that might be questionable.
Okay.
But for the most part, I think he was.
Okay.
I think he was. And I think a lot of that is proven when... he decided after two terms to leave and go back
yeah.
to Mount Vernon because there were some that wanted him to continue on as an autocrat.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
we have to think about that.
They talked about the king idea.
Exactly.
And, yeah.
Exactly. Now, as I just said, he poses a question in the book, you know, were the early presidents treated like average Joes? Well, in some cases, they were. James Polk, our 11th president, and I have portrayed James Polk before.
Ah.
Was a little known that his wife asked the band to play Hail to the Chief. That's where that came from,
huh.
James Polk. So that when he walked into the room, people would actually notice him. Now, this again limited the role for the president by design, and the framers, again, they did not want a tyrant. So
yeah.
they wanted, you know, they wanted recognition for the man, but they didn't want it to go over the top.
Well, did you notice last night during the inaugural, they did play Ruffles and Flourishes, which is the da-da-da-da-da-da.
Yes.
And then
yes.
they went right into Hail to the Chief when
yes.
they introduced the president.
Yep.
But when they introduced the vice president, they went into a tune that I don't remember ever playing when I was in the Army Field Band.
Yes, that's a different.
Is it a different one?
A march, and I can't remember the name, but
okay.
When we first started doing our Dinner with the Presidents years ago, we used that particular march for the early presidents because
oh.
Hail to the Chief didn't come along until James Polk.
Oh, okay.
So
yeah.
I think we're getting close to a...
Yeah, we are. We got about 30 seconds.
So. Okay. So as the United States grew in the 20th century, communication, of course, and commerce sped up. Americans turned to Franklin Roosevelt to steer the country out of the Great Depression.
Yeah.
And he, in fact, turned to his successors for domestic solutions ever since. So people are still looking back at Franklin Roosevelt, and I think he was mentioned a couple of times over the past week as we were approaching this more recent inauguration.
Okay, let me get a break in, and then we'll come right back and finish this.
Sounds good.
Hang on.
Charlie, do you know because of you, more Marian residents know that flipping the bird was invented in 320 B.C. than in any other county in America?
Yes, but I didn't tell you the rest of the story.
What's that?
At 320 B.C., in 1 minute, the fat lip was invented.
WWGH Radio, 107.1 FM. Don't miss it.
Adopt US Kids presents What to Expect When You're Expecting a Teenager. Learning the Lingo.
GOAT, G-O-A-T, acronym, stands for Greatest of All Time. As in, spaghetti sandwiches for dinner? They're my fave. Dad, you're the GOAT.
You don't have to speak teen to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same. Visit AdoptUSKids.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt U.S. Kids, and the Ad Council.
Well, we're back on the air with Fred Malone of the Marian Historical Society.
Okay, good deal.
Continue on, Fred.
All right, well, the information that I have gotten here is based on an interview that was given by John Dickerson. One of the questions he was asked was, with the daunting nuclear age, how did that affect things? And his answer, and I quote, the Cold War required a permanent war footing. In 1947, for instance, Harry Truman restructured the military and established the CIA and the National Security Council. All of that put power in the president's hands. And, of course, that's the most important part of today's cabinet. And, unfortunately, the Senate was throwing up a little roadblock yesterday about getting that individual that was responsible for that sworn in right away. So hopefully that'll happen right as soon as possible.
Was there always a cabinet? You know, even back when Washington was president, did he have some, you know, three or four people?
Yes, he had a group. I don't think it was referred to as a cabinet in those days, but he had a group of close advisors.
Okay.
And most of them were people that he had been involved, some of them people that he had been involved with during the Revolutionary War.
Okay. Well, he probably didn't have a nuclear energy czar back
no,
then.
No, no. One example of this is, and this is from when Bill Clinton was coming into office. He said on the morning of his inauguration, Bill Clinton was given his lesson on how to launch nuclear weapons. Quote, there's a difference between knowing about the presidency and actually being president, he commented, about taking on the weight of the job. It's hard to describe in words, and I'm quoting Clinton, but I left the Blair House with my eagerness tempered by humility.
Wow.
And, of course, something happened yesterday that had never happened in our nuclear age history of the presidency. There were two footballs yesterday.
There were two?
Two footballs
yesterday. One went with the president down to Florida?
For the morning, right, absolutely. Because Trump did not technically relinquish power until 12 o'clock noon and left for Florida around 8:30 in the morning, and Biden wasn't sworn in till noon. They had to have two of them.
Now is Biden the president at noon, or was he the president after he finished being sworn
in?
Well,
technically, and someone even mentioned, I think, in passing yesterday that it happened about 8 minutes early.
That's what I thought, yeah.
But technically speaking, according to the Constitution or the rules of law, he doesn't actually assume the presidency until 12 o'clock noon. However, because the oath of office was given, there's an assumption made that he has power. But the nuclear football code did not expire until 12 o'clock noon for Trump. And Biden did not get his cookie. Well, I'm sure he had the cookie in his pocket before he approached the...
They call it a cookie?
They call it a cookie,
they
call it. He had the cookie in his pocket before he approached the podium to take the oath of office.
Oh,
but that's the first time in history that that's happened, because obviously subsequent or previous presidents have always waited around and ridden to the Capitol and been there for the swearing in. So
I assume they negated Trump's cookie at 12.
12 o'clock noon, the code changed and went to the code that Biden was carrying in his pocket.
Huh.
he was asked, Dickerson was asked, does your research suggest a woman might handle the pressure better? Now, that's interesting, considering now we have a vice president that's a woman. And his answer, the presidency requires skills that have often been associated with women leaders. Empathy, for example, is necessary to represent the whole country and not just your political base. But we have a president that is very empathetic. Very. He has much empathy.
Biden? Yes, very much so.
Women are also associated with a consensus-based decision-making process where you can make the case that would be useful in dealing with Congress. Now, our vice president and our new president both have experience in the Senate. So I think that can only be helpful going forward with working together with both the House and the Senate. Let's hope, anyway.
Yeah, well, yeah. Kamala's laugh puts anybody off.
Oh, I would certainly think so.
But I don't want to be on the bad side of her. No, I've seen her talk.
I think that can turn around on a dime
as
well.
Yeah, I think so.
What traits suggest the president will succeed? Can he or she tell a joke? President Biden's been known to tell a joke or two with his Irish background.
Mm-hmm.
This might sound odd, but it's a fast glimpse of their emotional intelligence and whether they have the right temperament for the job.
Huh.
The other thing you'd want to know is, have they been through a situation where they've had adversity and failure and returned with resilience? And
I think our new president qualifies
very much so in that aspect with the things that have happened in his life, both politically and personally. Social media. Oh, that's an interesting question. Social media these days have made it even harder to be president, which we just found out with what's happened recently. It has influenced our worst impulses by making us draw quick decisions, quick conclusions, and play to an impatient crowd. We saw that quite a bit with the previous administration. Political campaigns were already encouraging short-term thinking, and social media even makes it worse.
Yes.
Now, in recent years, our presidents have caught hell for playing golf. Dickerson was asked if he thought that they should play more golf. He said, yes, they should. We know that the mind needs escape.
Sure.
A president is never really away from the job. It's a 24/7 job. We all know that. A president should do focused task work with blue sky thinking and relax to recharge. Every person in business who is highly functioning knows this. And I can tell you, having run a bank for a number of years, I had to have things to get away from that because, you know, you take your job. When you're in charge of something, you obviously take your job home with you every night. Sometimes it's hard to put it on yourself.
I used beer.
Well, I was a golfer.
Well, I golfed and I drank together.
Oh, my, that's not a good combination.
No, it was terrible. Thank goodness I'm down to one beer a week now.
So I'm not sure whether Joe plays golf or not. I think we'll have to find that out. I've never really read anything about him being a golfer.
Well, didn't President Trump say when he came into office that he wouldn't have time to play golf?
Oh, well, he criticized Obama tremendously for playing for playing too much golf, and I think maybe Obama played 50 times in the 8 years he was in the White House.
Is that right?
Trump had over 310 in his 4 years that he played golf. So, How do you know all this stuff?
You
can't always call the kettle black.
That's true.
What can be done to make this job easier? It's a terrible, terrible job, we all know. Who wants it, really? Who would really want the job? Thank God there are people that do. The overload of the job can be solved only by radically paring back the president's responsibilities. And I think this is where Obama and Biden had such a good relationship. Obama was able to let Biden handle things that took some things off of his plate. And hopefully Biden will be able to do this with Harris.
Well, I like the idea that both Obama and now Biden want their vice president to be the last person in the room.
Absolutely.
I love that.
Absolutely. Yeah. And for a number of years, that was not the case. Until just recently, that started to be a part of our presidential history. Early vice presidents,
they were do-nothings, weren't they?
Mark Hanna said it correctly when they were looking for a vice president for William McKinley in his second term, because his first vice president had died in office.
Mm-hmm.
And Mark Hanna's suggestion was, let's get Teddy Roosevelt because we'll stick him in the vice president job and no one will ever hear from him again, which was normally the case. But unfortunately, we know what happened. Yeah. Or fortunately, we know what happened. Yeah. Teddy Roosevelt assumed the office when McKinley was assassinated.
Yeah.
But generally, it was a dead-end job, and people went nowhere after that.
Huh.
So,
it looked to me, while watching the inaugural, that Vice President Pence had decided once the leash was gone about 2 weeks before the inaugural, he was going to act presidential, and I was very proud of him.
Yes, I was too. I was glad to see that. I think a number of people were glad to see that, and at least it proves that he does have scruples, and he does appreciate the Constitution and respect the Constitution.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think a lot of people were glad to see that.
The only bad thing is it seems like he was pretty much afraid of President Trump.
Well, I think that was the case with a lot of people.
Yeah, and
that was the case with
history will tell us more about that.
Yeah. And finally, his last question in the interview was, what's a surprise perk of being president? Of course, there are probably many. But his answer was, you get your questions answered quickly, which you do.
Yeah.
You can make a difference in people's lives with a smile or by pushing for policy changes, which is true. And by your example, you can change a generation.
Wow.
So
wow.
I think we've seen that in the way the 45th president conducted himself.
Right.
And I think we're going to see that in the way the 46th president handles himself in the
office. Have you done any research on the most presidential documents signed in the first day? Because surely Biden took that record.
I have not, but
17 executive orders
yesterday, and I think he started signing again some more today. I think there were another 8 or 9.
Wow.
Executive orders that he had prepared and ready to go this morning.
I'm sure you know the answer to this. An executive order is not written in granite, right?
That's true, absolutely. And again, we're finding that out because a lot of the executive orders that Biden signed this morning rescinded ones that Trump had signed during his presidency.
Yeah.
So, And then there are certain things that, and I don't know where the fine line is, but there are a number of things that cannot qualify for an executive order and must be done through congression.
Probably having to do with money spent.
I'm sorry?
Probably having to do with the amount of money spent.
Well, something. I think that probably has a lot to do with it. Also, military functions. Maybe,
yes.
Again, I'm not sure where the line is drawn, but I do know there are distinguishing factors that qualify something for an order and something that must mandate congressional action.
Well, I'm not sure whether you're done with this segment, but tell me... oh, shoot, I forgot what I was going to ask you. I had a good question. I'll think of it later.
Well, I am done.
Okay.
I am done with the particular section.
Oh, I know what it was. What was the name of that book again?
Yes, the name of John Dickerson's book. It is called, and I have to grab it here real quick, The Hardest Job in the World.
Okay, The Hardest Job in the World.
Yeah, and it's recently out, and it's on my list of to-dos. Mention real quickly right now, And I always like to speak of what I'm reading for people if they're interested. But I'm currently reading a book by Eric Larson. Are you familiar with Eric Larson?
No, I'm not.
Eric Larson is a very prolific writer here in the last 5 or 10 years. He writes historical fiction.
Oh.
And I'm not a fiction writer normally, but because it's historical fiction, I do read him. And I've read all of his books to date. And the only fictional part is that he will maybe create conversations in order to make the book move along. But all the facts and the information are history-based. But his most recent book is called The Splendid and the Vile. And it is about the early days of Winston Churchill's prime ministership and the beginning of World War II with Britain joining the war and what was going on in England with the upcoming bombings and the things that were going to be taking place before the U.S. got involved in the war. So he's a very good writer. I would strongly recommend any of his books, but this current one is called The Splendid and the Vile.
It just came out.
It's been on the top 10 bestseller list for the New York Times for about the last 6 months.
I just finished listening to a, I'm not sure what to call them, not a blog, but a recording of John Meacham talking about 45 minutes talking about Winston Churchill's run, and basically on his speech when he told
to Parliament.
I'm sorry?
To Parliament.
Yes.
The one that roused up Parliament and got the support and, behind him.
Yes, and I think I love listening to that type of history, and especially by John Meacham.
Yeah, John's he's another one of my favorite authors.
Yeah. Now we're down to 5 seconds, so okay. We'll get back to you in just a moment.
All right, sounds good.
Okay.
Charlie, do you remember when Mr. McFeely from Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood came to visit us?
Yes, I do. All 3 times. What a great time we had.
Yes, riding in the popcorn parade twice with him was great.
He made more speedy deliveries that day than the post office does all year.
WWGH Radio 107.1 FM. Don't miss it.
GTG, BRB, OMW, be there in a few. You may think that these kinds of texts are fine because of their length, and you can easily send them at a stoplight. But no, answering one text can take your attention away from the road for 5 seconds. And traveling at 55 miles an hour, that's enough time to travel the length of a football field. Make good decisions. Don't text and drive.
Visit StopTextStopRex.org, a message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, Noise, and the Ad Council.
Well, we're back here on the air, and that's the name of the program, On the Air.
On the Air.
with Fred Malone of the Marion Historical Society, and many other things, but that's the moniker I've given you, I guess. So continue on, Mr.
Okay.
Malone.
Well, I really appreciate the opportunity to continue this on. Charlie and I used to have a lot of great discussions.
Oh, yeah. He was a lot smarter than me, I'm sorry.
Oh, my word. He was a walking encyclopedia when it came to Marion County history, and I barely touched the surface with that. I've of course, been interested in history since I was a young kid and minored in history at Ohio University.
Right.
Which we've talked about before. And actually started out my career being involved with historical organizations in Hocking County, where I grew up.
Okay, yeah.
I was president, the youngest president of the Hocking County Historical Society.
Up in Logan.
When I took that job over in 1972. Mm-hmm. So I've been enjoying being part of historical societies for my entire life.
And, fantastic.
As I spend more time with the Marion County, I learn more about Marion County's history, but I'm more prolific in American history than I am in localized history, at least for now, anyway.
Well, you're working at it, though.
I'm working at it. And I started working on this particular concept for a program with you a few weeks ago when I knew the inauguration was upcoming. And I thought, well, I know we can't cover all of the presidential inaugurations in one show, so we may have to carry on to next month.
Okay.
Which I think will still be, you know, pretty much on people's minds, the presidential election that just took place. So
let's do it.
We'll start with George Washington.
Okay.
Of course, interestingly enough, he was inaugurated in New York, which I'm not
now,
sure
see,
people
Now, see, you've
know.
Already given away one of my trivia questions.
Thank you. Sorry about that.
No, that's all right.
The inauguration of the first president of the United States took place on the afternoon of April the 30th of 1789 on the balcony of Federal Hall, which overlooked Broad and Wall Streets in New York.
But who was in charge between 1776 and 1789?
The Continental Congress.
Ah, yes, okay.
The Continental Congress.
Now, was there like a president of the Continental Congress or some sort of leader, director?
Yes, they did have presidents of Continental Congress.
Okay.
And actually, if I remember correctly, John Hancock served as the chairman of a number of those.
And also had very large handwriting.
Well, true, yeah. But anyway, as Washington came out, he got a thunderous ovation from the people who jammed the streets and housetops as far as anyone could see. There weren't any official ceremonies lined up for that particular day. So people, of course, heard about it, and they came out to see what was taking place.
Yep.
Then as he took the oath of office in his dark brown American-made suit, a deep silence swept over the crowd.
Because he's wearing dark brown, right?
Dark
not
brown,
blue.
Yes. Now picture this in your mind's eye.
All right.
There was not a sound from the streets until Chancellor Robert R. Livingston, who administered the oath, stepped forward to the railing and shouted, "Long live George Washington, President of the United States."
That's kind of cool.
Once again, the crowd broke into cheers. The stars and stripes were raised on the staff behind the balcony. And from the harbor, a 13-gun salute announced the birth of a new republic.
13 guns because there were 13 colonies?
13 states, 13 colonies,
yeah,
right.
States.
Washington's cream-colored English-made coach was the very best of its kind.
Oh.
Heavy and substantial, it was drawn by four or sometimes six bay horses. And it drew up, loaded up the new president, and took him to his first presidential mansion, which I'm told was too small for his menagerie, which consisted of his wife, her two grandchildren, four secretaries, and a multitude of servants. Four secretaries.
Wow.
And that was located, obviously, in New York City. And I don't have an address for it, but I know it was right downtown.
It was 666
New York.
No, that was Trump's new tower there. Go ahead.
All right. So that was our first inauguration. Now, our next president, John Adams, who was serving as Washington's vice president because he was the second highest vote getter in the Continental Congress. That's the way it was working in those days. John Adams, he was not a happy president.
No. Oh.
He was kind of an irritable man, actually.
Why did he get off his...
Well, I think he was irritable from the fact that he lost the first presidential election. It was not in his nature to be very happy anyway, and he had less reason to be so during his political career. Now, and again, here's the distinguishment between vice presidents then and vice presidents now. As vice president under Washington for 8 years, he was completely overshadowed by the stately and heroic president. Adams, who was short, chubby, wore plain clothes, and was often called his rotundity.
Oh, geez, that's
behind his back,
cruel.
Obviously. He just didn't stand out. When he was inaugurated on March the 4th of 1797, now at Philadelphia, because the inauguration changed from New York to Philadelphia, he still played second fiddle to Washington. So even though he was the incoming president, he was still in Washington's shadow.
Well, that's probably true with all presidents.
Well, in some cases it is, I think, except for yesterday, maybe.
Yeah, well, maybe, yeah.
On what should have been the greatest day of his life, the cheers of the crowd were all for the retiring president and not the incoming president.
That would destroy him.
They forgot about the little man who was being sworn in. Bitterly, he wrote his wife in a letter that he, referring to Washington, seemed to enjoy a triumph over me. Methought I heard him say, I am fairly out, and you are fairly in. See which one of us will be the happiest.
Oh, my. Do you think he really said that?
According to the letters that were written to his wife. And there is a book out that have all of those letters in it. I don't remember the title of it off the top of my head, but I've read the book.
Now, did Washington not like him either?
Well, I don't think there was any love lost.
Okay.
From what I've read in history. And, of course, Adams and his wife Abigail were prolific letter writers.
Mm-hmm.
Adams was away from home a great part of their married life.
Yeah.
So all of these letters were kept, and in a book.
Abigail's almost as famous as her husband.
She is. She really is. And if you've ever watched the play or seen the movie 1776, you get a feel for the amount of letters that were written back and forth to these two.
Yeah.
And a lot of that play does have authentic pics of history in it. So you can see how different already the first president's inauguration was to the second president's inauguration. And by the way, Adams and Abigail were the first president and first lady to live in the newly or being constructed White House, which had oftentimes been referred to by Abigail as just a large cabin, a cavern that was cold, dark, and damp, and most of the time filled with soot and smoke.
And built by slaves, right?
Yes, built by slaves, right. On a muddy hill overlooking what was then the formation of the new capital, Washington, D.C.
Interesting.
So, yeah, big difference.
Yeah.
difference. So after after Adams comes Thomas Jefferson. Now, Thomas Jefferson, how much time we got here? Are we getting close?
We got 6 minutes.
Oh, okay. Thomas Jefferson was the first president to be inaugurated in Washington, March 4th of 1801. So we've gone from New York to Philadelphia, and now we're in Washington. And now, going forward, every inauguration take place after that will take place in Washington.
Okay. I think
and
that's
it was
another
called
one
Washington
of my questions.
City then, not Washington.
Oh, was it really?
Columbus,
okay.
Right? Just, yeah, not Washington, D.C. It was called Washington City. So that inauguration took place March the 4th of 1801, and he was the first to be elected to buy the House of Representatives. Before that, the other two done by the Continental Congress. This came about when Jefferson and Aaron Burr, both leaders of the Democrat-Republicans,
yep.
One party, each received 73 electoral votes, and the House broke the tie by electing Jefferson. According to the law in operation then, Burr, the second highest candidate, became his vice president.
Mm-hmm.
So we, of course, don't want to forget Burr, because later on he had a little confrontation with Alexander Hamilton that
didn't
end well for Hamilton.
Yes.
The tall, auburn-haired, sharp-featured Jefferson spoke for the masses, the farmers, the pioneers, and the apprentices, and despised what he called the aristocracy of wealth. Now, even though he was an aristocrat...
I knew what you meant.
Hey, thank you. To his fingertips, he did own some 200 slaves and a large plantation in Virginia called Monticello.
And apparently had children by some of the slaves.
Well, history has proven that by DNA, believe
yeah,
it or not.
Yeah.
So, yes, that's absolutely true. Nothing else really stood out about the inauguration. He did have 14 servants in the White House. His dinner parties were often very frequent and lavish. At the same time, he did cut out a lot of the glittering presidential ceremonies that had been started by Washington and Adams, and he did open his door to all without regard for their social classification or their financial abilities. So he did accept people into the White House.
Fantastic.
So not too much else about his inauguration.
What was his livelihood? Was he a farmer?
He was a farmer,
yeah,
yes.
Okay.
He was a gentleman farmer, right.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Now, going forward, and I must say that I have a number of books and publications on presidential history,
okay.
And a lot of the inaugurations were not very well documented. Most of the times they were slightly mentioned in most of the histories that I've been able to acquire.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of information I don't have on inaugurations, so some of them may be minimal.
Yeah.
But that's just because there wasn't much written down about the inauguration.
Well, some of them probably didn't really affect anybody, I would think, because it really is just saying, okay, you're in charge, and then moving on.
Well, and a lot of the problem, I think, too, occurred because in those days we were limited to a smaller number of states.
Yeah.
Communication basically was done by horseback,
yeah.
Delivering what mail was being written. So in order to communicate from, say, Maine all the way down to Virginia, it took a number of days by horseback to reach
right.
that.
Yeah.
So they weren't dealing with the numbers of crowds that we normally see at inauguration. Although we didn't see a crowd there yesterday, we did have the ability to broadcast it to billions of people on television.
I was surprised at how much applause there was at the end of the fireworks. And that must have come from the National Guardsmen
well,
or something.
Well, evidently there were 25,000 of them
yeah.
there. I'm
yeah.
sure they provided quite a bit of it. They
yeah.
were ringing the city. Plus, you know, there were other groups there besides the National Guard. The city
sure.
of Columbus had, it looked like a contingent of at least 100 or 150 police officers that
yeah.
took part in it. And I'm sure other large cities sent police officers and sheriff's departments sent people as well. So, yeah, I think that that was remarkable.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, we're down to the last minute here. And
okay, well.
Who are we going to take up when we come back?
Well, actually, we can take up James Madison because I
okay.
don't have a whole lot on him.
Okay.
James Madison was president 1809. Actually, Mrs. Madison probably drew more attention than what he did.
Good old Dolly. Yeah.
Good old Dolly. Unfortunately, He was our smallest president, standing only 5 feet 4 inches tall, and
weighing
a mere 100 pounds. Very small individual. An unopposing figure, more of a mind than a man, and had a tiny, almost inaudible voice. He was very gentle, very kind, and very scholarly. He was a Princeton graduate and did serve his country well as a father constitution and a champion for the Bill of Rights.
Okay. We're down to the last 5 seconds, so we got to get going. We'll come back in 15 minutes.
Sounds good. I'll leave the line.
You're listening to WWGH Radio 107.1 FM, Marion, Ohio, The Talking Place. For legendary comedian and the voice of Ursula in The Little Mermaid, Pat Carroll.
And as I teased before we went to the break there, we have on today a lady who I've had on the program, I believe, 2 times before. But every time she comes on, I am excited. She's one of the most kind, kind is the word I think of when I think of this woman, people that I have ever talked to. And I can tell you, I won't name names, but there are people who have been in Hollywood and had a great career who are not as kind as you might think they are. This woman exceeds the kindness that you might think she would be. She has the greatest laugh in the world, and she was the voice of one of the